Mount, Professor Emeritus of Laurentian University's Department of History in Sudbury, Ontario. As in America, where Spanish rule led to wars against Amerindians, European rivals, local rebels of Spanish extraction, and the United States, Spain's North African Empire did not come cheaply. Over a period of 300 years, from the late 15th century until the late 18th, Spanish authorities erected a formidable fortress at the Fuerte Victoria Grande, or Great Victoria Fort. We had to marvel at the grit and determination required to transport the necessary building materials up a big hill and to put them into place. As in the Americas, the struggle was ongoing. One monument honors an 18th century Spanish commander whose forces prevented a Sultan of Morocco from taking Malaya. Undoubtedly, the Sultan, whose name was Muley Mohammed bin Abd Allah, who lived from 1757 to 1790, thought that he was masterminding a reconquista of his own. But after three centuries of Spanish rule, Spanish King Carlos III, who governed from 1759 to 1788, regarded Malaya as Spain's to keep. Since then, as 20th century wars illustrate all too well, not everyone regarded international boundaries as sacred or inviolable. Fighting took place between 1921 and 1924 as Moroccans tried and failed to seize Malaya. With Spanish authorities determined to retain Malaya, the Spanish army maintains a presence. A few blocks from the Moroccan border is a Spanish army base about the size of a city block, protected by a fence with barbed wire. Exhibits at the Military Museum in Old Malaya review actions by the Spanish Army and Navy in this area since the arrival of Pedro Estupiñán in 1497. The exhibit also included a film created to recruit young men and women into the Spanish Army. The film ended with a picture of King Felipe VI, King of Spain since 2014, and the words, "Always at the service of your king." Nor is the army the sole law enforcement in Malaya. Several cars of both the Policía de la Frontera, the frontier police, and the regular police were parked near the Moroccan border. Yet, it would be misleading to describe the enclave as heavily militarized. Soldiers and police keep a low profile. It would be easy for cruise ship passengers, who often venture no farther than the old city or the Plaza de España, to think that Malaya is a normal Spanish city, apart from the fact that it is in North Africa. Throughout the walled old city, signs indicate Spanish activities dating back to the 15th century and a church constructed in the 17th century. Many women, as well as a few men dressed in unmistakably Muslim garb, walked Malaya streets near the Plaza de España, but they are by no means unique to Malaya. Women with hijabs and men with a fez are common sights in cities of Europe and North America. Of greater interest to tourists, the more than 50 radio and TV channels available in our hotel room included two in English, one sports channel, one radio channel, but none in Arabic. The Museum of Contemporary Art included works by Salvador Dali, Francisco Goya, and Pablo Picasso, as well as Malaya-born Victorio Manchon, but none by Muslims. Reality sets in for those who spend more than a day in Malaya. Signs warn residents to conserve water. The bartender in our hotel, an affable Berber Muslim, told us that Malaya must depend on Morocco for its water supply because the Rio de Oro, River of Gold, which flows through Malaya, is too small. When Joan and I walked past the Rio de Oro, it was all too obvious that such a pitiful stream could not supply even 100 people with water. Clearly, Malaya must depend upon Morocco for its water supply. Even on April the 1st, our first morning in Malaya, the skies began to brighten only at 7:40 a.m. When Spanish dictator Francisco Franco allied himself with Hitler, Franco decided that Spain should be in the same time zone as Germany, and his successors have not changed that decision. As Morocco operates on the same time as the United Kingdom, Ireland, and Portugal, everyone crossing the border between Malia and Morocco must deal with a time change. The bus trip from the Plaza de España in downtown Malia to the border at Beni and Zar lasts about 9 minutes. A leisurely walk in the opposite direction requires roughly an hour. When Joan and I went, all 14 passengers on the bus, other than ourselves, appeared to be Muslim. One European Spaniard boarded at the first stop, but in most respects, the trip, the price of which was less than a euro, resembled one from Europe to the Middle East. Everyone at the border appeared to be Muslim, and Muslims operated a secondhand flea market around a badly littered square at Via Francesa, French Avenue. On the main street, men and women loaded packs of goods onto their backs before heading back across the border. Yet apart from some graffiti, we saw no Arabic writing. The Berber bartender at the Hotel Anfora later confirmed our impression that the men and women outside the Comercial Jamaica store were packing goods to resell across the border. He thought that most of the goods at the flea market were also destined for Morocco. As for ourselves, we never saw people burdened by such loads anywhere else within Malia. The barrier at the border looked capable of stopping most people from crossing illegally. Closest to Malia was a chain link fence topped with barbed wire. Two other fences, the same size, 2 meters, stood about 2 meters apart, too far for a chipmunk, let alone a person, to jump. There was also a fourth, shorter fence. One would need great athletic skills as well as considerable luck to climb up and down the fences undetected. Yet, the barrier was not foolproof. In a book published in 2018, entitled How Barriers Between Nations Are Changing Our World, author Tim Marshall wrote, quote, "In early 2018, at least 200 African immigrants stormed over the fence, some so desperate that they attacked the police officers trying to stop them," unquote. Outside a police station near the Rio de Oro, we saw 5 men. They appeared to be from sub-Saharan Africa. The CBC's Nala Ayed placed the number of those who, she said, jumped over in January of that year, 2018, at 130. A steady stream of Moroccans passed through the border crossing, but not to all who cross legally or otherwise are Moroccans. Joan and I saw no other non-Muslims near the border, but everyone seemed totally indifferent to our presence. As we walked back to the city center, we saw several women picking up litter beside the Rio de Oro and putting it into plastic bags. As the river reached its mouth, it had hardly any water left in it. The farther we walked from the border, the more European Malia appeared to be. Along the way, we saw a steam engine built in Germany for the proposed Berlin to Baghdad railway and subsequently deployed in North Africa so that Spain could maintain control over its portion of Morocco. The April 1st edition of Malia's daily newspaper, Malia Hoy, which means Malia Today, reported that Pope Francis, Pope, as you will remember, from 2013 to 2025, wept as he returned from his recent Morocco trip when someone asked about the barbed wire fences which separated Malia and Ceuta from Morocco. The Pope said, "He who erects a wall ends as prisoner of the wall which he raised," unquote. The Pope said he knew immigration to be a hot potato, his words, but felt that there must be a better way to deal with the problem. The April 2nd edition of Malia Hoy continued with the aftermath of the papal statement. The newspaper included a picture of plastic bags atop the barbed wire. Fernando Grande Marlaska, Spain's Minister of the Interior, responded that he could not replace the border controls until something better materialized. The minister regarded the current construction as a relic more suitable to the 17th century than to the 21st, and the Department of the Interior hoped to take action before the end of the year. That action would probably involve raising the fence to 10 meters in those places which face the largest number of assaults. The increase in height would permit removal of the offensive barbed wire. CBC reporters Nella Ayad and Stephanie Jenser attributed the building of the fence to the conservative government, conservative Spanish government, of Jose Maria Aznar in 1998. According to Malia Oy, the socialist government of Jose Rodriguez Zapatero added the barbed wire in 2005. Apparently, the fence had broad support among those Spaniards who gave the matter much thought. Later in the week, the border continued to dominate the news. The lead story in the April 4th edition of Faro, which means lighthouse, said that nearly 200 illegal immigrants had arrived overland in Melilla during the previous 15 days, fewer than 9% of the number who had come at the same time the previous year. Arrivals by sea decreased by 83.3%. In Malayo Oy, reporter Lorena Japón wrote that Chema Garcia, head of Spain's police union, had visited Melilla the previous day. His impression was that the union's 120 members, police and Guardia Civil, Civil Guard, were doing a good job, but suffered from stress because of demands at the border. Nicolás Sánchez Morales, a law professor at Spain's University of Granada, had written, "I am in total and absolute agreement with Pope Francis. Professor Sánchez called for greater cooperation between Spain and Morocco." However, in a CBC report of the 25th of September, 2018, Nella Ayad said that the ones who were making the greatest effort to pass through the fence came from Syria, Yemen, and sub-Saharan Africa, not from Morocco. The front page of Faro reported, quote, "Melilla was the Spanish region that underwent the worst loss of employment during March," unquote. Faro's story indicated a loss of 400 jobs, and its editorial called upon somebody to do something. Areas with high unemployment normally do not go out of their way to assist refugees. Even the employed could not be generous. The April 1st edition of Malaya Oy reported that teachers in the local schools received 500 to 800 euros fewer than their counterparts in Navarre. The Hotel Anfora's congenial bartender, like most of Malaya's Muslim men, wore Western clothes. He told us that Malaya's young Muslims attended schools where Spanish was the language of instruction and where English and French were taught as foreign languages. Arabic was not part of the curriculum. A Berber himself, he knew no Arabic. Despite religious differences, he said, Malaya's Muslims consider themselves Spanish. In support of what he was saying, Malaya TV celebrated its 25th anniversary while we were there. A hostess surnamed Mohammed, but dressed in Western clothes, shared a program one afternoon. In 2019, Malaya proclaimed devotion to religious tolerance. A plaque described Malaya as a place of cultural coexistence and touted the city as a place that had promoted religious tolerance. The mayor of Malaya unveiled that plaque in 2001, but such had not always been the case. King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella feared that people other than Roman Catholics might act as collaborators should Muslim rulers decide to return. And to forestall such an event, Ferdinand and Isabella introduced the Inquisition. The Inquisition remained the law of Spain until 1834. Unless cruise passengers shopped, their economic impact must have been minimal. Dozens of them, most of them seemingly old and infirm, had coffee at an outdoor cafe or followed a guide through the downtown core. few seem capable of climbing to the fort and museums, or to the castle from which they could admire Malaya's architecture. In any event, most admissions were free. Most ships left Malaya mid-afternoon, perhaps because Malaya's stores closed for their lunch hour at 2 p.m. Nor does it appear that Malaya expected many non-cruise ship passengers. Joan searched and searched for postcards, and eventually she found packages of them in a government-operated tourist shop. She had the choice of the entire package or none at all. Finding t-shirts or caps, it said Malaya, was difficult, and signage at the ferry terminal where passengers were boarding for Malaga and Almeria was only in Spanish. That said, our Berber bartender told us the Spaniards, including Muslims in Malaya, enjoyed so many social security benefits, including education, that there was no lobby for annexation to Morocco. Indeed, Joan and I never saw a single Moroccan flag in Malaya. What a contrast from Northern Ireland, to be discussed in the seventh podcast in this series, where the Irish tricolor flew throughout the Roman Catholic areas. Yet even in the 21st century, Malaya has not totally repudiated its intolerant past. It maintains a statue of Francisco Franco, who, with the help of Hitler, Mussolini, and Moroccan mercenaries, overthrew Spanish democracy through the Civil War of 1936-39, then governed Spain until his death in 1975. In most other parts of Spain, people regard the Franco period as a not-to-be-repeated dictatorship. Perhaps Malians remember that when Morocco gained full independence in the 1950s and forced French and Spanish civilian and military authorities to leave, Franco insisted on keeping Ceuta and Malaya. For that, residents of any religious persuasion in Malaya could be grateful. First, Morocco has the last surviving monarchy in North Africa. Those in Egypt, Libya, and Tunisia disappeared in the 1950s. It cannot be in the interest of King Mohammed VI. Malaya probably survives as a Spanish enclave because, like Hong Kong before 1997, it serves as a useful purpose to both parties. First, Morocco has the last surviving monarchy in North Africa. Those in Egypt, Libya, and Tunisia disappeared in the 1950s. It cannot be in the interest of King Mohammed VI, King of Morocco since 1999, to destabilize the region. Second, Malaya serves as a safety valve for Morocco. Moroccans can cross into Malaya, purchase merchandise, return to their own side of the border, and sell it at a profit. Third, the government of Morocco values its commercial ties with countries of the European Union and does not care to challenge one of its members, Spain. Fourth, as Berbers, members of Malaya's Muslim community have decided that it is better to be part of an ethnic minority inside Spain than to be part of one inside Morocco.